from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking? I'm James Coe. Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
How sweet it is to be loved by you.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline, live from the Service Master by Cornerstone Studios, with Jeff Calkins on today's show, presented by Red River Toyota in Wynn, Arkansas, online at redrivertoyota.com. We're back with the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
I needed someone to understand my ups and downs. There you
Jeff Calkins is columnist of the Daily Memphian, also host of the Jeff Calkins Show, 9 to 11, right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. He's on X at Jeff underscore Calkins. Jeff, how was your extended weekend?
I had a very good weekend. Yesterday, Claire and I set out to do a road bike thing, and I set out to do 48 miles, I think, 46 miles maybe, whatever, and we got lost, so I ended up riding 59 miles, and I'm a little sore today. It's been a long time since I bicycled 59 miles. So, but then it did occur to me, I have a niece who does these, what are they called? Ironman, the real Ironman stuff, right? She's awesome. And they bike 100 miles, and then they run a marathon, and then they swim.
Right.
Is it 1 mile or two? It's just such insanity. I was dying after a 60-mile bike ride.
You should be. we'll give the Ironman people their credit, but you should be dead after a 60-mile
bike ride. So that was good. And then,
what was the route, or was this?
Well, it was out in Moscow, which is beautiful. It's just gorgeous out there, I have to say. They do something every year called the Tour de LaGrange, Tennessee. And so you drive, whatever, from where we are, it's about 35 minutes maybe out there. And then it is absolutely beautiful, just beautiful. Past like Rossville,
yeah.
And I think then, you know, what's the other one? Piperton,
yeah.
Piperton, Rossville. Then you get out there to Moscow. And I don't know how a place in Tennessee came to be called Moscow. Seems a little odd, right? But stunningly beautiful. And what is the route? That was exactly the problem.
Yeah,
if I knew the route, we wouldn't necessarily have gotten lost. But there we were pedaling along, and we noticed, like, we're kind of alone now. You know, there's no one else near us. What happened? I don't think we're that much faster than everybody else. We must have taken a wrong turn. And anyway, that was fun.
How long does a 59-mile bike ride take?
So it should... I mean, whatever, it takes, you average, if you're clipping along, you're averaging between 15 and 20 miles an hour on your bike. So so it certainly...
3 or so hours?
It takes 3.5 hours, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, some people, it doesn't take your professional cyclist that long, but it takes me that long. So, yeah, that one of the problems with cycling, there's several. One is, as a form of exercise, there's a lot of gear involved, and I'm not a gear guy, right? And cyclists tend to be gear people, and that's just not me.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have your little Garmin that you've got the route on it. That's one of the problems I had. And then you got everything. The bike is an elaborate, you know, is an elaborate machine. And then, the clip-in shoes and gear,
yeah.
gear. So that's one of the problems. Second problem is the chance of death, because you're out there on the highways with people, and even if you don't get hit by a truck, you can fall over. And every person who's cycled seriously for any length of time has a wipeout story, you know, has wiped out. and that can be ugly. But then the other real problem with it is the amount of time it takes. Like, if I'm actually, as soon as I hang up, I'm going to go for a run. And I'll run for half an hour, and it'll be a good workout, right? I'll run,
yeah,
whatever. I'll run 3.5 miles. Whereas cycling, you're out there for 2-3 hours at a time to get your workout in. And so it's a little bit of a time-consuming deal. But it is fun. Honestly, riding a bike is fun. And then the biking community in Memphis is just tremendous, honestly. And it is, among other things, diverse. Mm-hmm. And so, which I wouldn't necessarily have expected. And so it is a cross section of Memphis. And I really appreciate that about the cycling community in Memphis. But anyway, I came back, jumped in the pool, wrote a column on Bill Walton. It was a very productive day.
Yeah. And speaking of which, that column on Bill Walton is what I wanted to get into next. He passed away at 71, didn't really tell anybody about his cancer and how much he was struggling, because that's just not really his style. But you wrote about how much he's linked to Memphis from 1973 national championship, 21 for 22, 44 points, maybe his best game ever. And he had a lot of good games. He's a Hall of Famer. But he'll always be linked to Memphis. I thought you did a really good job of sort of highlighting that, him and Larry Finch and that relationship.
Yeah, two things stuck out to me. One is, in this Hall of Fame career, you know, three-time Player of the Year in college basketball, one of the greatest, identified by the NBA as one of the all-time 50 greatest players. You know, truly one of the, obviously injuries had an impact on his
sure.
career, but peak Bill Walton was about as good as it gets in the NBA. And yet, in the context of that, the only game that I saw actually written about, like in Obits, and I read a good number, the only game that anyone particularly referred to that he is remembered for is that game against what was then Memphis State.
Yep.
Certainly in the New York Times obituary, the only game that they wrote about was that game. And so it's sort of striking. It's not like he didn't have other massive games or other important games. You know, when he was a sixth man with the Celtics, I actually had season tickets to that team way back when I was in law school. And then he was a sixth man. But when he was for the Portland team, he was the fulcrum. He was the best player, the dominant player on the Portland team that won the championship. And yet no one's writing about particular games there. They're writing about the game when he scored 21 out of 21, hit 21 out of 22, scored 44 points against Memphis State. But then the other thing that struck me was, here in Memphis, where he, you know, the dream season, he
yeah.
ended. You know, Memphis took a lead early in the second half. Larry Finch put him up by 2 points. And Bill Walton then hit the next three baskets and, you know, didn't miss in the second half. You would think he might be sort of remembered a little bit as a villain, right?
Sure.
Like, do you think they're celebrating Tom Brady in Atlanta?
No. Know,
for example? But he's not. I think, and some of it's because everything he did after that, and so we think of the TV persona. But it's sort of striking that he in Memphis, I think, is remembered with great affection. And I think it's for two reasons. One is, the performance was so epic, so iconic. You know, you weren't just beaten by a better team. You were beaten by maybe the all-time greatest performance in NCAA championship history. And there is honor in that. And then the fact is that Bill Walton, whenever he talked about that game, he talked about it with the same respect and about Memphis State, with sort of this great feeling of mutual respect. And so there's this picture of Larry Finch helping Bill Walton off the court at the end of the game, because Bill Walton, with about 3 minutes left, sprained his ankle after he'd done all the damage and the game was
yep.
in hand. And as Harold Bird, one of Memphis supporter, told me, he said, if Larry Finch, having basically had his heart ripped out there by Bill Walton, if he could show the class to help Bill Walton off, that sort of set the example for Memphis fans. And I just sense that entire relationship going both ways, from Memphis fans to Bill Walton and Bill Walton back to the program, was a relationship built on mutual respect. And I think that's why, you know, Bill Laurie, among others, you know, texted me yesterday to tell me, you know, how much Bill Walton's meant to them, and there were many others. And so I do think there is a connection between Memphis and Bill Walton that is a big part of his legacy.
And there's just no sideways words about the guy. He was just, I mean, he was a bright spot. Even with the eccentric personality, I know some people, right, it wore thin by the end of the Pac-12 after dark days or whatever. Right. I always enjoyed it, man. I never took it too seriously. It was a good time to have him be himself, at 9 p.m. watching Colorado and UCLA duke it out. Like, that was fine. It was always great.
It is absolutely true that sort of at the end his TV persona was a little wacky,
right? Yeah.
But it was, he came at it from a place of joy. You know, this is not drudgery,
right,
here. This is basketball. He came at it from a place of joy, and I think that's what marked Bill Walton in many respects. He had this curiosity, this enthusiasm. Now, there were moments, I think he had 30-plus surgeries on his feet and ankles, and there were moments in the early 2000s when he would talk about being deeply depressed and even contemplating taking his life. So it's mm-hmm. not like he was all fun and games, but I think he had this, enthusiasm for life, for sports, for the Pac-12. I mean, he didn't have, I mean, just this was 2 months ago. He was doing games, right? He was
yep.
doing games. And obviously at the time, he knew that he was struggling with cancer. He might have known his days were numbered. He didn't have to be doing that. I'm sure Bill Walton had enough money. But there he was, because he wanted to, it appears, live life to the fullest. And so I think, if you wanted to roll your eyes at him, I can hear that, but I think we all understood that he was coming from this place of enthusiasm and joy.
Yeah. Now, he won his final championship there with Larry Bird in 85-86 with the Celtics. Now the current Celtics have moved on to the NBA Finals. Is this year they get it done? It looks like the Mavs are likely going to get through.
Personal transition, Gabe. By the way, you went from Celtics to Celtics, bringing us from the old Celtics of old, and you are a radio.
Hey, come on now, come on now.
Yeah,
yeah.
Pretty serious.
Yes.
I mean, is it what I think it is likely when the time they get it done? I will say that, we'll see what happens tonight. It feels like a matter of time now that Dallas will, finish off Minnesota. I certainly would pick the Celtics, but that series, which no one would have predicted, I don't think anyone at the start of these playoffs thought Dallas was going to emerge from the West. Not many did. I think the way Luka has played and the way Kyrie has played, I think it suddenly has real intrigue. Here's this one team over in Boston that has been the best team all year long. It's not just that they drew the short straw. I mean, drew an easy path in the playoffs. Yes, they did, but they were the best team. They've been the best team all year long, and now they are faced with, or peers, they will likely be
right.
faced with Luka, who is kind of reminding people that, yeah, maybe he is one of the best players in the world. I mean, that step back was just so cold. just crazy. So he's just like, it's great. Like, you don't
right.
have Steph and you don't have the Lakers, whatever, but you've got a superstar on the one hand, and then you've got the team that hasn't ever gotten over the hump on the other hand. I think it promises to be a really interesting matchup.
Now, with that step back, which was awesome, like the Friday night, just watching
right.
that with some buddies, like I was screaming at the TV, because they were
yeah.
chasing that Rudy Gobert matchup the last 2 minutes, and I'm like, they're going to get it right here, and he's going to take a step back three for the win, and he's likely going to make it, just because I had a feeling at that moment. But that happened. Now, a lot of the conversations about Rudy Gobert, and I guess you give him some blame for not being able to keep up with him on the perimeter, but who the hell can keep up with Luka Doncic on the perimeter?
Yeah.
I think the biggest source of blame there, Chris Finch, man, you saw them chasing it for 2 minutes. You need anybody but Luka to have the damn ball in their hands at that moment. Let PJ Washington beat you if
right.
he's going to shoot a three. But just putting Rudy
right,
out there on an island with Luka was unfair as hell. That was coaching malpractice.
I think it was coaching malpractice. You let and PJ Washington might have. He always seems to every game here.
Sure,
big three, right? So, but yes, let's let him take the shot. So I kind of agree with you. I did not. Clowning on Rudy seems to be a, you know,
it's a thing, yes.
Country. but that was mostly just, it was mostly Luka's greatness. It was, the second thing was coaching malpractice. And then, yes, that you could throw Rudy in there.
Yeah.
Less.
And I think the biggest issue, too, with the Timberwolves, Karl-Anthony Towns, it's not just that he's been a no-show, he's been awful. Like, he has been completely right. Detrimental to any level of success that they're trying to have. And he was good through the first two rounds, but now it's just like 4-for-16 shooting performance, 6-for-20 shooting performance, 5-for-18 shooting performance in game three, where he is 0-for-8 from three. He is the biggest issue. Beyond Chris Finch, beyond Rudy Gobert, beyond anything that you think is wrong with the Timberwolves, Karl-Anthony Towns has completely killed them.
I mean, Anthony Edwards has not been transcendent.
Sure.
Like, he has not been the next Jordan on the series at all. Like, but he's been okay, right? Karl-Anthony Towns has been bad. John Hollinger had a piece today in The Athletic, basically said, if he had just hit the shots that he always hits, you know, yeah, well, he was a 39% shooter, I think, from three this year.
Yeah.
If he had just hit the shots that he typically hits, the Timberwolves would be winning the series. But he very clearly has not. And so when you're staring at this massive contract for him going forward, I know they've said, or it appears to be, that they want to just run everything back. That's a lot harder to swallow given the performance that they've gotten from him here on this biggest stage.
Yeah, they're going to be paying a lot of money. And then Rudy Gobert is also extension eligible this offseason, if I'm not mistaken. So what happens if they pay him a max,
yeah,
a massive deal?
Well, and also, what is Karl-Anthony Towns' value, right? Does he have positive value at that price? I don't know. So it's a, you know, it's a problem. It's clearly a problem that they will have to wrestle with. Now, mind you, still been a hell of a year for Minnesota.
Yes.
You know, like, it been a hell of a year for Minnesota. And I think if you're looking at the teams, young teams that have gotten further than one might have imagined, if you look at like Indiana and Oklahoma City and Minnesota, I think the one who you're least confident that will be back is Indiana, although they do have the good fortune of playing in the East, right?
Yeah.
But like, that feels like they got the benefit of a pretty easy draw. And are they going to be back in the finals in the next 5 years? Likely not, right? I think Oklahoma City should feel pretty good about
yep.
itself. They're like, ah, it's just our time hasn't come yet. And then I think Minnesota's kind of in between there because they got Mike Conley's age, because they got the ownership situation, because they have, you know, the sorting out contractually. So they're sort of in between. But they do have Anthony Edwards.
Yes.
And, you know, that's a hell of a start.
There is a misnomer, too, right? I think there's a misnomer about the Timberwolves. You always hear people, you know, put them in that category of young. They're not young. They're not that young.
No, well, Karl-Anthony Towns isn't young. Rudy Gobert isn't young. Mike Conley isn't young.
Anthony Edwards, Naz Reid, and Jaden McDaniels are, but...
Right. They're young, and if that's what you had to start your team with, you would say that's a hell of a nucleus.
Yes,
right?
100%. 100%.
So... But no, the rest of the team isn't young.
No. Now, Grizzlies number 9 overall pick. We've had a long weekend to sort of see rumors and reports.
Yeah.
Going to ask you this. This intrigues me. Do you think they make a pick at number 9? Like, do you, in your heart of hearts, do you think they actually pick at number 9?
Well, no. In my heart of hearts, I think the easiest thing to bet is that they do not stay put at number 9, because they never do.
Yeah.
Like, they almost never stay put. They either move up or they move back, right? And so I think, like, that's their history in the draft. So I think given the particular pressures of this year and the needs, to find a big, even more reason to think they won't. But does that mean... So yeah, I'll say no, they don't pick at 9.
Okay.
But could they pick at 11? Could they pick at 7?
Right.
Could they pick at 13? Could they pick at 5?
3?
Could they...
the Rockets?
I think all those things are on the table. What are the reports that you've that you've heard over the weekend that intrigued you?
I haven't
seen a lot of reports.
The Rockets are dangling that pick out there. I guess I don't really think the Grizzlies should do that, but that's
the
there. Now, and then the other ones would be, I saw Bet Tennessee had like a little interesting thing about implied hypothetical odds. Dalton Connect at number 9. And then Devin Carter, who is the son of Anthony Carter, has been rumored to the Grizzlies. I think at number 9 that would be a reach, though. But I think he really does have some you know, positive momentum to being a pretty high pick. I think the Spurs are involved on him, too.
Yeah, I don't think at 9, I don't think he's much of a reach. You know, he will go somewhere in the 6 to 15.
And also, I think in this draft, we've talked about this, it feels like there'll be a lot of picks that we view as reach.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, once you get past the first 5 or 6, it's going to be, even then, honestly, it's going to be, you know, pick your poison or your favorite flavor or whatever. I don't think, like, if Zach Edey goes at 9, it's not what I expect, but I don't think it's much of a reach. If Carter goes at 9, I don't think it's much of a reach. If Dalton Connect goes at 9, I don't think it's much of a reach.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners. The road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster. Wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
There are some who you'd like go whoa to, but Devin Carter's been terrific. He tested off the charts at the combine. He had a terrific season this year. He has sort of the profile of players that the Grizzlies have sort of historically liked, with a long, deep college career. He doesn't fit necessarily perfectly in terms of fit, in that he's not a big, right? But honestly, like, who would have a bigger impact next year? Ron Holland or Devin Carter?
Devin Carter, no doubt.
100%, right?
Yeah.
So he's a better fit than Ron Holland. And it wouldn't shock me if they took Ron Holland at 9. So it wouldn't shock me if they took Devin Carter at 9.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's the whole question of, like, he's perceived as a riser. Is he really a riser, or are we just realizing he is?
Yes. Are we just realizing the boards actually have him on it pretty high?
Yeah. The teams have liked him. Right.
Yeah. And then also Jared Allen. Jared Allen, it's like Grizzlies and Thunder involved there.
The worry there, honestly, is however much the Grizzlies have a bunch of stuff they could give up, right? For whatever.
They could make a very competitive offer.
Right. Oklahoma City has more.
right.
Whatever you say the Grizzlies have. Now, that doesn't mean they're willing to give it up. But however, yes, if you're just looking at who's got more ammunition stacked up behind them, the Oklahoma City does. And both teams, I mean, honestly, Oklahoma City maybe even more than the Grizzlies need a big. Well, they both need a big. They both need someone to rebound. And I think Oklahoma City, that need is particularly fresh in their minds given what happened to them in the playoffs. So they get kind of beat up. And so can you outbid Oklahoma City?
How much are the Thunder willing to give up for Jared Allen as opposed to the Grizzlies? Grizzlies could talk about a pick swap and a second round pick, their late pick, 59 or 57, whatever it is, for Jared Allen and number 20. So it'd be 9, late second round, Marcus Smart, Jared Allen, number 20, coming back to the Grizzlies. Like, that seems like a damn competitive offer. How much more would the Thunder give up?
I don't even know why you'd have to get 20. I don't even know that it'd be a pick swap. What wouldn't you just give up 9 and Marcus Smart for Jared Allen?
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be better to have a pick swap. So you'd get 20 coming back, great. But I don't see why you'd – I mean, if I'm Cleveland, I don't know that I – am willing to do that. I mean, maybe, yeah. Whatever. I guess, but I think Marcus Smart in nine is fair. And yeah. So, yes, that is the question. It's not whether it doesn't matter if they have more ammunition if they're not willing to use it, right? If they're so yes, you're.
Could I make the case that the Thunder are better positioned to make a quote unquote on the surface level losing trade than the Grizzlies? Like, is that sort of the idea about outbidding the Thunder for Jared Allen? They maybe, are better positioned to lose a trade on the surface level than the Grizzlies are.
They have more to spend. Yeah, yeah. There's no question. I mean,
they'll give away a first round pick, one of their many first round picks, and not give a damn.
It's when you're like, if you're buying a house, like if the other guy might be able to bid, you know, $40,000 over asking price, where you can only bid $10,000 over asking price, and then they'll hook up the house. But then he will have a house that he overpaid $40,000 for. So, so having said that, when you're trying to win a championship, does it really matter if you overpay a little bit, like by giving up a nine who wasn't going to help you this year anyway?
I don't think so.
Does it really matter? Like, I don't. Does value, the pure value calculus of a trade matter if it gets you where you want to go? I reminded the Detroit Lions. The value of their draft pick, not this most recent draft, but last year when they drafted a middle linebacker and a running back in the first round, no one liked the value of those picks. Right. But they got him where he wanted to go, so who cares, you know?
Yeah, I think if you were in my situation – to get back like number 20 and you give up 50. Yeah, and then you got a Devin Carter and then you had Jared Allen too. That would be pretty cool. That would be
one of the problems. If you have to give up Marcus Smart in this deal, one of the problems is, like, if right now the Grizzlies just sit at nine and draft a wing because Ron Holland is the best player there, let's just say, right? Mm-hmm. And so then you're like, where's he going to play? Or Devin Carter or any perimeter player, any sort of wing, you know. Where's that guy going to play? Whereas, because you're already looking, you got Vince, you got Gigi, got Marcus Smart, you got, you know, at least for now, Luke Kennard. Like, where is that person going to play? But if all of a sudden Marcus Smart is gone as part of this deal, then that extra pick for that wing would kind of come in handy to replenish the depth you lost by dealing Marcus Smart.
Yeah. And I do think that Marcus Smart with Gigi and Vince Williams Jr. coming along, he's pretty, I mean, relatively expendable on the open market. Like, that's why we're talking about these things now for a trade with Jared Allen.
Yeah,
he's
you know what it does, though? It then puts a situation on. Let's just take Marcus Smart off the team. Are you saying Luke's still on the team? If those guys are gone from the team, then all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, Vince is going to start. That's fine. I got no problems. But then you're in a position where you're counting on Gigi.
Yes.
And then after that, Jake LaRavia, like, right, you're counting on him as opposed to hoping, you know, as opposed to saying, well, we're going to let him grow at his pace, and if he turns into a superstar, that's great. All of a sudden, if Marcus Smart isn't on the team and Luke Kennard isn't on the team, whatever, then all of a sudden, Gigi's a guy who you're counting on being a regular part of your rotation, and you're counting on Vince, and maybe that's where we are. Maybe we're comfortable enough that they can handle the, you know, that. But it's kind of more, isn't it more comfortable to know you've got Marcus Smart in the mix with them?
Yeah, I guess so, but.
Or not. You're just totally comfortable saying, Vince is my starter, Gigi's coming off the bench, I'm fine.
I don't feel that bad about that. I'll be honest.
Right. Well, that's, and that might be the way you go with it.
Yeah. We'll see. It's going to be interesting, but I appreciate it, Jeff.
See you,
Jim. Yes, sir. That's Jeff Calkins at Jeff_Calkins on X, Daily Memphian columnist. Also host of the Jeff Calkins Show 9-11 right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Now we're approaching the NBA Finals and the NBA playoffs, of course, have tipped off. But it's not too late to get in on the action with FanDuel, because right now new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 bet. That's $150 to use on same-game parlays, live bets, championship futures, and so much more. There's no better place to bet all the playoff action than America's number one sportsbook. Just go to FanDuel.com/GabeK. That's G-A-B-E-K. Again, G-A-B-E-K to get started. FanDuel's an official sports betting partner of the NBA, 92.9 ESPN. You must be 21+ and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire just 7 days after receipt. If you have a gambling problem, call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. 8-9. Now, we have some NFL news to get to. OTAs continue to roll along, but we have some wide receiver contracts. One's been ironed out. That has to do with the Texans and Nico Collins. And then there's a couple of contract situations for a team by the name of the Cincinnati Bengals that are not so figured out. So we'll talk about all of those situations next.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Now we turn our eyes toward the National Football League, and I think this is a really interesting offseason for wide receivers. If you're watching closely, Justin Jefferson, who I think most people think is the best wide receiver in the league, is waiting on a contract. Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, same exact thing. T. Higgins has yet to sign a franchise tender to make $21.8 million next year for the Bengals. You have CeeDee Lamb waiting on a deal. We have one guy that came off the board, though, and that's Nico Collins. And I'm going to start with the good business dealings first. This was a good business deal here for the Texans. The Texans are going for it right now with C.J. Stroud on a rookie deal, second year of his rookie deal. They'll have three more years to expend with that rookie deal before they have to go ahead and re-up him. Today, Nico Collins got paid, who was the number one receiver for C.J. Stroud last year, mind you. 3 years, $72.75 million in an extension, $52 million guaranteed. Can we be honest about that deal? That's actually good fair market value for Nico Collins. $24 million a year is not at the top of the market by any stretch of the imagination. And then his guaranteed money, $52 million guaranteed, that's 10th on the wide receiver market right this second. And this is a guy who, if you look at last year, he's going to turn 25 going next year. 91 catches, 1,461 yards, 9 TDs in 17 games, including the playoffs last year for Nico Collins. That is a good business deal. That's getting out in front of something and saying, we want to get this done right now and have him on this potential stretch run into a championship if we're the Texans with C.J. Stroud on a rookie deal. That's great business dealings. Now, when I'm talking about CeeDee Lamb, when I'm talking about Justin Jefferson, and certainly these two guys for the Bengals, I can't necessarily say the same. Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins for the Cincinnati Bengals both miss voluntary OTAs, second round of voluntary OTAs. Now, I'm not one that will just sit here if a vet or a star player misses OTAs, voluntary OTAs. It's not usually a thing you push a panic alarm. And I think both these guys are in different situations. Ja'Marr Chase is missing. I don't know why. Maybe he's putting more pressure to get his extension done this offseason. But he's going to get paid. Like, I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that the Cincinnati Bengals are going to fork over the requisite amount of money to go pay Ja'Marr Chase. T. Higgins, on the other hand, this should be concerning, him missing two rounds of voluntary OTAs, because I wonder what it's going to look like in training camp, because do you realize T. Higgins has not even signed his franchise tag yet for $21.8 million going into next year? What's going to happen with this Bengals team? I think that also, like, you look at CeeDee Lamb, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, these teams need to understand that if you pay somebody out front and reset the market, that market only goes up. So if you let one of these other teams, let's say the Vikings, reset the market with Justin Jefferson, you're probably going to have to pay over that amount once Justin Jefferson goes and signs that contract. You just let the market get reset, and then you have to pay at that market value. If you set the market, you likely will pay less on the back end. I don't understand why they still don't quite understand this. But I'm curious about this Bengals team, Connor. I could make a way better case with the Joe Burrow wrist injury, with these two wide receivers that seem to be relatively unhappy. Most unhappy is T. Higgins. Trey Hendrickson is unhappy, who had 17 and a half sacks last year on the defense side of the ball, even though they were bottom four in total defense last year. I just look at all these things together. I can make a way better case that they'll finish last in the AFC North than first. And this was a turnaround from 2 years ago where I looked at them as the team that could knock off the Chiefs, the team that could be a AFC staple for years to come because of what Joe Burrow and these wide receivers and everybody was doing. But now you look at them 2 years removed from that, and you feel like this could be one of the bigger what-ifs since the 2020s in the NFL.
Yeah, it's really, you know, you hope it doesn't happen, but it's not going the right direction for the Bengals right now. And the Joe Burrow wrist injury is going to be really interesting to see how that develops, because I brought it up a few times, but AJ Hawk on the Pat McAfee show talked about the injury and talked about the surgery that he had. It was the same one that Joe Burrow had, and he was like, my wrist just never got back to where it could be. And for a quarterback, it feels like the wrist is a pretty big deal. You know, I'm not 100% sure if it's on his throwing hand, but either way, is it?
I think it is.
Oh, yeah, that's not great. That's not great. But during the break, I asked you, I said, could we, you know, in a few years look up and say, man, the Bengals, kind of like that Thunder team, you know, from the NBA when they had Durant, Westbrook, and Harden. Like, they had all of this talent, and all they had to do was give these guys money and extensions, and they made it to the finals, couldn't get it done. They made it to the Super Bowl, couldn't get it done. And then they just decided not to pay any of these guys, and then an injury happened, and then all of a sudden it's over. It's over.
And I think that part of this, too, is you can't pay everybody. I don't think you can pay
T. Higgins. Like Tyler Boyd, like, that made sense. Like,
yeah, you can't necessarily pay T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase both $30 million contracts, even though I both think they're worth it over the next 3 years, and then keep the rest of your team together. And then Joe Burrow with the wrist injury, you've already paid him, like you're just in a weird spot. So I think it is very similar to that Thunder situation where you couldn't necessarily pay everybody max contracts. Somebody had to leave, but you still could salvage your situation if you paid the money up front and tried to take care of Ja'Marr Chase right now.
Right.
And let T. Higgins walk, do whatever you need to do, trade him for certain assets for a year if he signs his franchise tag with somebody else. There are ways to move, but they're just sort of sitting on their hands, not really doing much with it. They're just hoping T. Higgins plays next year. They're hoping Ja'Marr Chase plays next year if they can get that contract figured out. It's a lot of hope and not a lot of action, and that's never a good sign for any franchise, much less an NFL franchise, with all this talent that they drafted and did a good job of developing.
Yeah, well, and even if that is the scenario that plays out, and they do get these guys to play next year, but they don't have deals yet, it does also feel like maybe, okay, we have to win this year because these guys might be able to walk. You know what I mean? It's just, it's such a risk going into the year not having these guys locked down.
Yeah, but I look at the two bits of wide receiver information today. Great business dealings from the Texans, as we've seen all offseason. And what is the big thing about them? They are acting upon these things. They're putting, you know, their process in action. Whereas all these teams that are sort of falling by the wayside, falling back in the pecking order in the NFL, they're just sitting on their hands trying to let things come to them. It's never a good plan of action to do nothing. I think that, hashtag analysis. To do nothing is probably not the best way to go. But you see that with the Cowboys. You see that with the Vikings not doing anything with Justin Jefferson. And you're seeing that with the Cincinnati Bengals playing out before your eyes. A lot of these teams could fall back pretty substantially the next few years if they don't figure out their situation right this second.
The Cowboys have had one of the most confusing off seasons ever.
Well, before it, what did Jerry Jones, he said, we're all in?
Yeah, we're all in.
Yeah.
And Zeke?
Everything about their offseason says they're not all in.
Not a single move. Not a single move has told me that they're all in.
No Micah contract. No CeeDee Lamb contract. What about that? No Dak contract. You let Tyron Smith walk to make a relatively a developmental pick for an offensive tackle at the end of the first round after trading down. Nothing about their offseason says they're all in. But Jerry Jones, he's sticking by that. Let's go ahead and grab a break, though, and we'll come back with small talk. And in small talk today, I'll give you an update on Bronny James. Bronny James, this situation, to me, just gets worse and worse by the day. But we'll talk about that next.
Every weekday from 4 till 7 p.m., except right now, it's time for Big Man Small Talk on 92.9's Gabe Kuhn Show.
And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, an update on the Bronny James NBA situation. He's going to stay in the NBA draft. I'm pretty sure at this point, that's what's going to happen. But the latest update, 10 workouts were trying to be scheduled with him, visits to teams where he could potentially, you know, put himself out in front of them and make them latch onto him, make them really love him. He has denied 8 of them. He's picked up 2 of them, Lakers and Suns. Good God. And apparently he's wide open to be drafted at number 22 to the Phoenix Suns. Have we ever seen a guy that didn't, he's had health issues, didn't show up at USC, didn't play well on a 14-17 team. Have you ever seen somebody with this level of a lack of production get this preferential of treatment heading into any level of professional sports, NFL, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball? We've never seen anything like this before. The amount of nepotism and the amount of attention he's getting. And I guess we're at fault, too. We're the problem, too, because we're talking about this. But have we ever seen this happen? No. It's nuts how this continues to spiral to a place that I just can't stand anymore. I'm a Bronny fan. I think he has a chance to be a fine player whenever he, you know, develops a little bit more, gets into the NBA. He can be, I guess, a 3-and-D style guy, play some good defense. But right now is not the point where that is going to happen. And for him to just completely deny workouts because of who his dad is and potentially be a first-round pick because of who his dad is, it's gross. He averaged 5 points a game. I think, what, 4 rebounds per game, couple assists per game on 28% from three last year. And he had a heart issue where he almost, I mean, he had to be hospitalized for a while because he had a cardiac arrest. This is insane. And I think, like, everyone needs to put their head together and put their hands in here. This is absolutely insane. We need to agree on that.
Yeah, it's crazy. Bronny is not anywhere close to being a first-round pick. Not even anywhere close. To be honest, might not even be close to being a second-round pick. He is not ready for the NBA.
And it doesn't even feel like you're, based on what Rich Paul has said, it doesn't even feel like we're at the point where it's like wherever he gets drafted, that's where LeBron's going to go. It feels like that, like we're past that. Like, that's not even a topic of conversation really as much anymore. But he's still probably going to get this type of treatment.
Does this just end in the Lakers drafting him?
I don't know.
It kind of feels like it's going that way.
He should be, if you're going to pick him late second round, I think he's got undrafted free agent measurability, like measurements and what he did at the NBA Combine. The NBA Combine, I guess he played okay. But it's like he scored, what? 4 points and 8 points.
Yeah, he was
in these
okay.
games. He wasn't lighting the world on fire. He wasn't killing anybody out there.
No,
he had good shooting numbers, but it took like 3 business days for him to get his 3-pointer off and like the in some of these drills. I just, man, I don't even want to come across as I'm hating on the kid. I'm just hating on the process. The process has been gross, nasty, negligent.
It's a disservice to him. I don't think it's setting him up for success. It's all it is doing is setting Bronny up for criticism. And you know, I hate it, to be quite honest. If the Suns draft him in the 20s, just that's absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. Is Bronny going to be the starting point guard for the freaking Suns next year? It makes absolutely no sense why he's even being discussed in the first round. He's a real possibility at 20. No, he's not.
He shouldn't
Maybe
be. Maybe he is, but he shouldn't
because
be.
The only reason they would make that draft pick is because Matt Ishbia is go over there on 2K figuring out how to get LeBron on the team, too. But, hey, guess what, dude? You're paying a guy who can barely walk $53 million next year. Have fun figuring out how to put LeBron's salary on top of that.
I do love that. The Suns fans thinking, oh, yeah, you drafted him at 22. Bron, come on down. Okay, LeBron can opt out of his player option this season for the likely.
Can I hit you with
Lakers.
A hot take?
But here's the funniest thing. You have $209 million of proposed salary going into next year for the Suns. How the hell are you going to pay LeBron? Is he going to take a vet minimum? No, he won't. Why would he? There's no reason to do that.
Can we also be honest about it? LeBron doesn't win you a championship. That team doesn't win championships still. Still don't have a point guard. Still have no depth. Still have Yusuf Nurkic.
It's crazy.
Still man. Not going to win a championship. You bring in LeBron, you're not winning a championship.
It's sickening.
You're going to have to get rid of the already the no depth that they have. They would have to get rid of to bring in LeBron, and they already don't have any depth.
I think Kendrick Perkins on a lot of
like,
things
what are we
does
doing?
Not do a great job on ESPN. But his discussion last week of when Bronny James got brought up for the 15th time, you know, that week. He even stood up and he's like, why do we have to keep talking about this? This is a guy who should be an undrafted free agent that's being forced into the spotlight because of who his dad is. It's getting to be annoying. I'll tip my cap to Kendrick Perkins on that, even though I disagree on a lot of things he does. But the out frontness of this story on ESPN and Fox and everywhere else, it's just this media creation that's taking on a life of its own. And I don't take kindly to anything like that.
I don't understand why the plan wouldn't be. If they want him to be in the NBA next year, the plan should just be the Lakers sign him as an undrafted free agent. That should just be the plan. We don't need to do all this crap about him getting drafted in the first round, all this stuff. It makes no sense at all. It makes no sense.
Rich Paul,
not a single team out there it would make sense to draft
Rich
him.
Paul.
Not one.
Rich Paul came out and he's like, you know, the very minimum of what we'll accept for Bronny James. And he says they don't even think they're going to get to this point is a two-way deal. If his last name was Smith, he wouldn't be worth a two-way deal.
If his last name was Smith, he wouldn't be in the draft.
He'd be an undrafted free agent playing in the G League, and that's fine. Like, I can't.
He wouldn't even be in the draft.
Right. Okay.
No one would. He wouldn't have an agent. He wouldn't have anything.
Except
he had 5 points last year as a freshman.
Accepting nothing less than a two-way contract when a normal person would probably more production than him is settling for that, having to hope for that. David Jones is hoping for that. He scored 22 points for freaking game last year. Come on, man. This is getting insane.
It's silly.
Now, let's go ahead and get to hour number three, though, on that note, and we'll open it with my guy Christian Fowler, as is customary on a Tuesday. He's next.
Hey, fantasy football owners. The road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster. Wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Like the, in some of these drills, I just, man, I don't even want to come across as I'm hating on the kid. I'm just hating on the process. The process has been gross, nasty, negligent.
It's a disservice to him. I don't think it's setting him up for success. It's all it is doing is setting Bronny up for criticism. And you know, I hate it, to be quite honest. If the Suns draft him in the 20s, just that's absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. Is Bronny going to be the starting point guard for the freaking Suns next year? It makes absolutely no sense why he's even being discussed in the first round. He's a real possibility at 20. No, he's not.
He shouldn't be. Maybe he is, but he shouldn't
be. The only reason they would make that draft pick is because Matt Ishbia is go over there on 2K figuring out how to get LeBron on the team, too. But, hey, guess what, dude? You're paying a guy who can barely walk $53 million next year. Have fun figuring out how to put LeBron's salary on top of that.
I do love that. The Suns fans thinking, oh, yeah, you drafted him at 22. Bron, come on down. Okay, LeBron can opt out of his player option this season for the likely.
Can I hit you with a hot take?
But here's the funniest thing. You have $209 million of proposed salary going into next year for the Suns. How the hell are you going to pay LeBron? Is he going to take a vet minimum? No, he won't. Why would he? There's no reason to do that.
Can we also be honest about it? LeBron doesn't win you championship. That team doesn't win championships still. Still don't have a point guard. Still have no depth. Still have Yusuf Nurkic.
It's crazy.
Still not going to win a championship. You bring in LeBron, you're not winning a championship.
It's sickening.
You're going to have to get rid of the already the no depth that they have. They would have to get rid of to bring in LeBron, and they already don't have any depth.
I think Kendrick Perkins on a lot of things.
What are we
does
doing?
Not do a great job on ESPN, but his discussion last week of when Bronny James got brought up for the 15th time, you know, that week. He even stood up, and he's like, why do we have to keep talking about this? This is a guy who should be an undrafted free agent that's being forced into the spotlight because of who his dad is. It's getting to be annoying. I'll tip my cap to Kendrick Perkins on that, even though I disagree on a lot of things he does. But the outfrontness of this story on ESPN and Fox and everywhere else, it's just this media creation that's taking on a life of its own, and I don't take kindly to anything like that.
I don't understand why the plan wouldn't be. If they want him to be in the NBA next year, the plan should just be the Lakers sign him as an undrafted free agent. That should just be the plan. We don't need to do all this crap about him getting drafted in the first round, all this stuff. It makes no sense at all. It makes no sense.
Rich Paul,
not a single team out there it would make sense to draft
Rich Paul.
Not one.
Rich Paul came out and he's like, you know, the very minimum of what we'll accept for Bronny James. And he says they don't even think they're going to get to this point is a two-way deal. If his last name was Smith, he wouldn't be worth a two-way deal.
If his last name was Smith, he wouldn't be in the draft.
He'd be an undrafted free agent playing in the G League, and that's fine. Like, I can't.
He wouldn't even be in the draft.
Right. Okay.
No one would. He wouldn't have an agent. He wouldn't have anything.
Except
he had 5 points last year as a freshman.
Accepting nothing less than a two-way contract when a normal person would probably more production than him is settling for that, having to hope for that. David Jones is hoping for that. He scored 22 points for freaking game last year. Come on, man. This is getting insane.
It's silly.
Now, let's go ahead and get to hour number three, though, on that note. And we'll open it with my guy, Christian Fowler, as is customary on a Tuesday. He's next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Hey, fantasy football owners. Anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive in the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.